In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Tuesday, November 17th, 2009. On Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, cybersecurity on our agenda this afternoon in hour number two of our program. The Senate Judiciary Committee taking a look at cybersecurity, and we'll hear from some experts about cybersecurity and the federal efforts in that realm. Risk management on our agenda in hour one today, and in particular, risk management at the Defense Logistics Agency. The DLA says that it provides the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, other federal agencies, and joint and allied forces with a variety of logistics, acquisition, and technical services. And Jeffrey Curtis is the Defense Logistics Agency's Director of Strategic Planning and Enterprise Transformation. And Jeffrey's just one of the guests in studio with me today to talk about risk management, and I appreciate you taking some time to come and be with me today.
Oh, thanks. We certainly appreciate the opportunity to be here today.
Now, the discussion of risk management came about because Jason Miller met you and some of your colleagues a while back at an event about this subject. Let's start at the very, very highest level and tell me what risk management means as a concept.
From a textbook perspective, enterprise risk management, that's what we're looking at today. It's not just risk management, but an enterprise perspective on that, would be the use of an integrated or holistic approach to understanding and managing the array of risks that an organization faces. We all manage risk every day, whether we consciously think about it or not. I saw a Washington Post article a couple of years ago about folks that drive in the HOV lanes without the requisite number of folks in the car.
Mm-hmm.
They're managing risk. They're opting to take that risk, and they're willing to deal with the consequences.
Okay.
We do things every day. There's certain things we know better than to do and not.
Mm-hmm.
What risk management does, though, as a discipline, is it provides a disciplined, structured, and rigorous approach to managing those risks. Now, you gave a great intro there to what we do at DLA.
I read it right off the paper.
And it was well written. The public affairs guys did a great job. But there's some aspects of what we do that are kind of business-like in nature. And as such, we can actually draw some comparisons between what we do in business.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually provide, as you mentioned, spare parts and all sorts of logistics services to the military, and we actually do that via sales. And fiscal year 2009, we had $38 billion in sales. To give you a rough order of magnitude of that, if we were on the Fortune 500, if we were a private entity, we'd be right around 60, 61. We'd be right near American Express, DuPont, Coca-Cola. So when you have an organization the size of ours, and we're not dealing with profit loss either. I mean, if we fail, if we go into mission failure, when we do things that don't work out well, we're not just having an impact on somebody's bottom line. Somewhere out there, there's a warfighter,
mm-hmm.
an airman, a soldier, a sailor, a Marine, who's not getting all the equipment he needs.
Mm-hmm.
So for us to, when we look at managing our risk, we can't just kind of wing it. We need that discipline, rigorous, and that structure approach to it.
Are you trying to quantify the possibility that something can happen, or are you trying to mitigate these risks from ever taking place in the first place,
both? It's absolutely both. And the kicker is sometimes we're not just looking at avoiding things that could happen. We're also looking at what are the chances that something we want to happen doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ways we do the mitigation, now that you've brought that up, actually, is in our office, we have not just enterprise risk management. We also have continuous process improvement, which some folks know it as Lean Six Sigma,
mm-hmm.
or theory of constraints. Has been around a long time, but I think is especially prevalent within the Defense Department and got its start there many years ago. Within our office, in my office, as you mentioned, I am the director of strategic planning. We actually have an office called Risk Assessment and Process Improvement. And Mr. Stagnetti, who's with us today and will mm-hmm. speak a little bit later, heads up that office and is the chief risk officer for DLA. What we do there is we actually have an office, an ERM office, and this office will lead the effort to identify the risks and then also look at how could they be mitigated. And we do that via, for lack of a better word, kind of a heat map.
Mm-hmm.
What is the likelihood of something happening? And if it does, what are the consequences? So some things we don't want to happen, but they're gonna. It's just life.
Right.
and the consequences aren't going to be too severe. We'll just mitigate those.
Uh-huh.
Other things aren't likely to happen, but if they did, the consequences would be pretty unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
So those we'll probably go after, even if.
Can you give me some examples of each of these?
Yeah.
Like talk about something that, you know, it's going to happen, don't really want it to, but we can deal with it.
One of the things, we actually did a pilot before we entered into risk management from an enterprise perspective. And our comptroller folks did it, or ran one pilot, and so did our Columbus, Ohio field activity. And the Columbus, Ohio field activity manages our land and maritime supply chains, so all manner of mostly Army-type parts and a lot of the Navy parts. One of the things they found that wouldn't have been intuitive, I think, if we just kind of done this off the top of our heads, was the ability in the future to recruit and retain a new workforce. It's not a surprise that a lot of the federal workforce, and DLA is no different, is aging. And at some point, I think we're going to see retirements at an increasing rate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if it's going to be like a tsunami of retirements. I think the economy has kind of tamped down some of the retirement output right now.
That seems to be what other agencies are reporting, is that is stretching out, at least. It's not going to be the big crash that a lot of people expected 5 years ago.
Right. And I think, you know, and that's a good point, Francis. I think we're almost on borrowed time. At some point, these folks are going to start heading into the next segment of their career. When we go to hire and replace these folks, it might not be one for one, but we're definitely going to be doing some increased hiring. We're going to be bringing in folks that are the millennials or the Generation Y. They're just different than the workforce we have today. You know, we were talking earlier, you have a 9-year-old son, I do, but I also have a 15-year-old daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And watching how she interacts with her peers, how she accomplishes tasks, it's just radically different. And she's going to be about the right age to be rolling in or indicative of that type of workforce. You know, just last night, I'm telling her, you know, do something productive. She's sitting there with her laptop, and she kind of turns on me, and she's a good kid, but she's still kind of wheeled on me because she's 15, and that's what they tend to do.
That's right.
But turned around and said, you know, I'm scheduling a cross-country practices. I'm doing homework. I'm scheduling a ride home from lacrosse. I'm sending a thank you note to Uncle Jared for the birthday card.
Uh-huh.
She's doing five different things.
And it looks like she's just playing around
just
on the computer.
Yeah. And so I'm doing one thing, and I'm nagging her.
Mm-hmm.
But she's actually accomplishing
Well, then you're doing
five.
Two.
That is true.
You were doing whatever you were doing and nagging her.
So I was multitasking.
Yeah.
But it's still only two things. She was actually doing five.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when that generation rolls into the workforce, the federal workforce, we got to be prepared for that. Because a lot of times, you know, even teleworking is still kind of unnerving to a lot of us that, you know, we can't see it. So
right.
It couldn't be happening. And that's the same thing I saw with my daughter last night. So that came up as a risk. You know, what if we're not prepared for this? We're going to have dry spots in the pipeline. And as I said, we can't afford to go into mission failure. So we've actually cranked up the efforts already in terms of Web 2.0 technology, social media, whether it's Facebook-like communication tools within DLA, using Craigslist as a hiring mechanism to get the word out.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe even it's going to be senior leaders using Twitter and tweeting. So already we've identified a risk just as part of the pilot, and we're actually taking the steps to mitigate that risk.
Okay, so that's one that's going to happen whether you like it or not, and how do we deal with it?
Right.
Before we go to the break, talk about something that you think could happen that you're trying to make not happen, actively working toward trying to make not happen. Just an example.
One, I think, is we deal in the area of demand planning.
Mm-hmm.
What we want to do is work with our customers to identify what their needs are going to be. So we're going to go buy the right things ahead of time, have them waiting on the shelf so when a warfighter needs it. The world is changing. I mean, you know, we hear things about, usually when you hear the word asymmetric, you think of asymmetric warfare.
Mm-hmm.
I think pretty much the whole world is turning asymmetric. So what happened in the past is becoming less and less, I think, the best predictor of what's happening in the future. You really got to get out there and collaborate with the customers. So we want to make sure that we are in lockstep with the customers so that we know exactly what their needs are, because we can't afford to not be. I mean, budgets are tight. We can't afford to buy anything that's not absolutely necessary. So that's one of the risks is how well we do demand planning.
Jeffrey Curtis is the director of the Strategic Planning and Enterprise Transformation at the Defense Logistics Agency. My guest on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll be back to talk more about enterprise risk management in just a moment.
Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
If the United States decided to hit back against nation-state cyber hackers, would we have enough information to be effective? Here's Martin Libicki, Senior Management Scientist at the RAND Corporation.
We may not understand all of their vulnerabilities. They may not understand all of our vulnerabilities. And so it's easy for one nation to assume that in a crisis, they can carry out a cyber attack and nevertheless withstand whatever we can throw back at them.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
And now, the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
If you want to give to a charity through the CFC campaign, remember that the Office of Personnel Management does screen the charities. It does not check on whether that organization is using its donations efficiently. That's up to you. Federal law requires the charity to send you a copy of its IRS Form 990 if you ask for it. You can also request the charity's annual report. Next week, how to file a complaint. I'm Amy Morris.
Will you be receiving a 25% life insurance premium refund check from your insurance company? WEPA policyholders will be receiving over $6.2 million this fall. In fact, since 1996, WEPA has returned over $45 million in premium refunds. In comparison, Fegley has never issued a premium refund. Besides a long history of refunds, WEPA offers significantly lower rates than the federal program. Visit WAEPA.org to learn more about the advantages of life insurance from WEPA. Again, that's WAEPA.org.
Cellist Yo-Yo Ma, one of the great stars of classical music, enthralls audiences all over the world with his passion and artistry. When it comes to picking a cello, he tends toward Italian instruments made in the 18th century. When it comes to a timepiece, however, he favors an instrument crafted in Switzerland, the Rolex Datejust. Since Rolex introduced the first self-winding calendar wristwatch in 1945, the Datejust has become one of the most sought-after models in the Oyster line. With its classic Oyster design and magnified date window, the Datejust is every bit as distinctive as the master cellist who wears it. To see the Datejust and a complete selection of other Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store since 1900. Tourneau, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
Federal News Radio in a Web 2.0 world. Find Federal News Radio on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio or join the Federal News Radio group on Facebook. Chat with our team and make connections with others in the federal arena. Email us at fnrcomment@federalnewsradio.com. Visit our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're talking about enterprise risk management with Jeffrey Curtis of the Defense Logistics Agency and introducing some of his colleagues, Jeff Stagniti and Linda Stacy Nichols, later on in the hour. Before the break, we were talking, Jeff, about the differences between enterprise risk management and risk management and the size of the Defense Logistics Agency. At what point did you decide we need to start approaching risk management from a deliberate, organized way instead of just deciding, well, we got, well, I sure hope that doesn't happen.
As I mentioned early on, I think everyone in every organization does risk management. It might not be through a structured approach mm-hmm. or through any particular software or even have a cadre of folks set aside to help drive it. But about a year ago, a couple of our activities. Our comptroller's office at our headquarters in Enterprise and our Columbus field activity undertook some pilots, and it became, it's probably a trite term, but it became self-evident that this is the right thing to do. You know, we got to be doing this. We have 25,000 people at the Defense Logistics Agency undertaking a myriad of activities, whether it's buying, storing, providing logistics services, disposal, reutilization. It runs the gamut. And we really need that structure to keep everybody kind of on the same page, keep everybody attacking risk from the same in the same means. Now, one of the things, though, as we were talking during break here a little bit, is my background is pretty much hardcore operations research. I was a data guy for a big chunk of my career. So when it came time to do this, Linda Stacy Nichols, who's here with us today, we spent a number of hours in my office looking at the business case analysis. And what we're seeing is enterprise risk management, there's going to be some cost. We'll buy software. We set up an office. We're going to have folks in the field drive. There's going to be a cost associated with it. But when you start to look at the payback, it's almost impossible, if not impossible, to quantify that which you've avoided. Mm-hmm. We want bad things to not happen. Mm-hmm. We want the good things we want to happen to happen. Putting a dollar amount on that is almost impossible. So for folks out there, when you look at risk management and you want a return on investment of X, you know, I need at least 10X, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. I need a payback period of X number of years or whatever. It's not going to happen, at least not that we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
But without a doubt, it's absolutely the right thing to do. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, this isn't about money. This isn't about, you know, stewardship is vitally important to us. Workforce development, vitally important. Those are two of our big three focus areas at DLA. But warfighter support is the absolute number one mission we do. And so if when things happen, they don't just impact us or money or anything else. They impact some warfighter out there on a front line. He's not going to have the equipment he needs.
But say I'm at some agency in the position that you were in at DLA saying this is the right thing to do. I think this is the right thing to do, but I got to go justify the purchase of the software and the spending that goes along with it in these budget times to the person that's above me or two or three levels above that person. How do you do that when you can't quantify it, as you said?
One way to do it, and I won't get into all of it here, but at some point in all of our lives, whether it's professionally, personally, organizationally, we've had something go wrong. And there's a cost associated with it. Whether it's we made a bad decision driving, we took the risk to drive too fast, we did whatever, there was a cost. If things happen organizationally, you can probably take to your boss and say, you know, this happened, X happened 2 years ago. We might have been able to mitigate that or even have it not happen at all had we had a more disciplined approach. This is something, looking back, things in hindsight, you know, it's always 2020. It's, wow, we should have known that. You might have known that if you were undertaking this enterprise risk management effort. Things that happened in the past, you can probably quantify. X happened. I drove too fast. I hired the wrong people. Whatever. I had to replace them. My car insurance went. There's all sorts of things you can quantify there.
Yeah.
And I would venture the guess that just one or two of those things that we can all probably pull up would more than pay for. And when you start looking at what you're going to pay for risk management in terms of the cost, looking in hindsight, just avoiding one of those would have paid for the cost of risk management and beyond.
Is there a limit as to what kinds of risks can be managed? I mean, can you, are there certain things that you can't do in that way?
I don't think so. I think the risks you're looking at, they could be strategic, they could be operational, they could be the human element. I mean, the example I gave earlier was on hiring. And I don't think that's an obvious risk that somebody would have thought of.
Right.
Our workforce in X number of years would have, you know, could be at risk in terms of can we recruit and retain. Some are more obvious. You know, some you could just come up with off the top of your head. But strategic, you know, what if we're not positioned properly in the future? What's going to happen with that? Operational, what happens if we can't do our day-to-day work? And what if we don't have the right people? So it really runs the gamut.
Jeffrey Curtis is the Director of Strategic Planning and Enterprise Transformation at the Defense Logistics Agency on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're going to blow up our conversation on enterprise risk management by bringing in some of Jeff's colleagues, Jeff Stagniti and Linda Stacy Nichols. We'll introduce you to them when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
I'm Peter Schack. Now, CNBC Radio, Wall Street erasing its earlier losses as investors try to follow up on the Monday rally that sent the major averages to their highest points of the year. The Dow, which has been negative all day, now up 4 points at 10,411. S&P 500 still down 1.5, and the NASDAQ composite is just about unchanged. Retailers grabbing much of the attention today. Both Target and Home Depot reported quarterly earnings above street estimates, but both stocks are down as investors express concern about future sales. On the flip side, retailer Saks seeing its shares jump as cost-cutting boosted it to a surprise quarterly profit. The Justice Department says nearly 15,000 Americans have voluntarily disclosed secret Swiss bank accounts. That's as part of a special IRS program. And the FDA warns that heartburn pills like AstraZeneca's Prilosec and Nexium can interfere with the popular blood-thinning drug Plavix, which is made by Bristol Myers Squibb and Sanofi Aventis. Peter Schack now, CNBC Radio.
Hi, I'm Jack Wilson, owner of Jack's Bistro. When it comes to my menu, I buy everything with my Ink card.
Introducing Ink, the new business card from Chase.
I was just at the farmer's market outside of Napa and found some amazing wine. I knew it would go perfectly with some of my new dishes. If I had an Amex card, I wouldn't have been able to buy it. They accepted my Ink card with no problem.
Ink is accepted at twice as many places worldwide as American Express, so you can take advantage of business opportunities whenever and wherever they present themselves.
And my wine purchases alone gave me enough reward points to take my family on vacation.
Ink also has reward points worth 25% more than Amex rewards when redeemed for air travel, and your points never expire.
This card does it all.
Make your mark with Ink. Go to chase.com/ink. Chase what matters.
Comparison between flights booked online through comparable Chase Ultimate Rewards and American Express Membership Rewards programs, excluding points transferred to other loyalty programs as of 9/16/09. Cards issued by Chase Bank USA, N.A.
They were young and they were forced to become prostitutes.
The ages of those women ranged from as young as 12 years old up to women in their mid-20s.
Special Agent Tricia Whitehill of the FBI's Los Angeles office, who says one particular human trafficking case involved 28 young women from Guatemala locked up in small, run-down apartments.
There were internal locks that you couldn't get out of the apartments. The windows were locked down so you couldn't get out the windows.
Whitehill says the victims were recruited for nice jobs in jewelry stores or restaurants. Turns out they were threatened with serious harm to their families if they didn't work prostitution in Los Angeles.
That was the primary threat that kept many of the victims working for this family for a long period of time, was the fear that their own families would be murdered in Guatemala.
Eventually, 9 people were convicted on human trafficking charges and sentenced from 30 to more than 40 years. The FBI worked with the LAPD, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, the Department of Labor, and other agencies. I'm Neil Schiff of the FBI on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
As government and commercial companies continue to improve their business processes, they're finding that IT requirement analysis, market reviews, product selection, and ongoing operations are taxing the resource base of their employees. TMR is here to help. TMR provides enterprise architecture, governance, and IT operational support to ensure our customers' IT investments are aligned with specific business goals, objectives, and capital investment strategies. For more details, visit TMR at tmrhq.com or call 703-323-1700.
See you later! Off-season greetings to all of Natstown. Give the gift that gives back all season long and buy a season ticket package for your favorite baseball fan. Tis the season for giving, so we'll add up to $7 to each ticket for every game in your plan. That's 7 free dollars to use to buy food, drinks, and Nats gear at Nats Park. It's the best value in town and a limited time offer. Call 202-675-NATS or visit nationals.com/2010.
This is Rynthia Rost, Vice President of Geico Insurance Company, urging you to give the gift of a membership fee to a child this year at your local Boys and Girls Clubs. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington supplies a safe haven, targeted programming, caring adult mentors, and educational activities to youth who would otherwise be home alone or on the streets. Log on to bgcgw.org and click on Donate Now to see how you can help. This message is brought to you by Geico and Federal News Radio.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're discussing enterprise risk management, at least as far as how it is done at the Defense Logistics Agency. We've been talking to Jeff Curtis, who's the Director of Strategic Planning and Enterprise Transformation at DLA. And Jeff, you essentially run the Enterprise Risk Management show at DLA.
It's part of my portfolio. Actually, we have two divisions within the Strategic Planning Office. One handles governance, development of the strategic plan, development of the new DLA director's guidance, which is a document which we pretty much live a lot of our day-to-day lives off of. Linda Stacy Nichols, who's here with us, runs that division. And then we have another division that handles risk assessment, process improvements, enterprise risk management, continuous process improvement, and then manager's internal controls, which identifies and mitigates material weaknesses. And that's Jeff Stagnitti, who's our chief risk officer also. So they're both they're the heads of the two divisions that report to me.
And welcome to both of you, and thank you for coming in with Jeff today to talk to me. Linda, you, as Jeff said, lead strategic planner for the Defense Logistics Agency. What does that mean? When you meet somebody at a barbecue, even though you don't eat the barbecue, what does that mean? What do you do?
What that means is we basically prepare ourselves for the future in a nutshell. And the future, of course, begins, you know, very immediately, like within the next year, the director's guidance that Jeffrey just alluded to.
Mm-hmm.
That's what really keeps us kind of focused for the next year. But then we also look out longer, over about 7 years' time, to make sure that we're positioned as any smart agency or business would be to anticipate the future and the future needs.
And, Jeff, you are the token orange man.
That's correct.
at DLA, and Chief Risk Officer. What's your nutshell job description?
Well, with regards to the role of the Chief Risk Officer, let me take a second to talk a little bit about what enterprise risk management is, and a little bit more relative to risks. I know that Jeff Curtis kind of set the stage for us, but enterprise risk management is really a management support process. It's a lens through which we try to focus information for our senior leadership to be able to consider courses of action and make management decisions. And when we're talking about risks, for us at DLA, we look at risks both from the standpoint of perils to be avoided, but also opportunities to be seized.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's such a good nexus between having my office and Linda's office both in the same organization. Strategy feeds some of the areas that we look at relative to risk, and then things that we uncover relative to enterprise risks are folded back into the governance processes in our strategy development and refresh process that Linda oversees. In looking at risks, we try to take a look at things that are measurable in terms of their likelihood of occurrence and the impact to the agency if they were to in fact occur. And we look at things that cross functional stovepipes and really have an impact for the entire agency.
Mm-hmm.
So with that as a background, the role of a chief risk officer basically boils down to three things. I kind of view myself as an orchestra conductor, overseeing and keeping an eye on things that are happening in a variety of different functional areas within the agency. My personal background is primarily in the financial management and operations realms, but we bring in information relative to information technology, facilities management, and a number of other functional areas. And by having the ability to see across functional silos, I serve as sort of a dot connector, being able to kind of sketch out the picture that those things are showing.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest roles are to serve as a facilitator of discussion amongst those different functional communities and serving as a communicator, trying to take sometimes complex concepts and distilling them down into more manageable pieces of information. Now, I am relatively new in this position as Chief Risk Officer at DLA, so a big part of what I've been working on lately has been actually setting up the Enterprise Risk Management organization for the agency. Focusing on outreach with the field activities, identifying the appropriate folks in the various communities of practice,
mm-hmm.
building and developing the relationships amongst the folks, and then getting a nascent start on the identification, assessment, and management of some of the high level risks that we've been able to come upon just in the I guess 2.5 months that I've been in this role now.
There are several pieces there I want to come back to. But Linda, first I want to ask you, Jeff Curtis mentioned earlier about the pilot program where you first tested this concept, and we've talked a little bit about it off the air. Walk me through the genesis of the pilot program and then how it was executed, what it was all about, the whole ball of wax.
Sure. We just finished the pilots right about a year ago. And what happened is we deliberately ran one at one of our headquarters elements, which was our comptroller office. And then we ran one at one of our field commands. And we have really 14 or so major field commands, actually, you know, both overseas and in CONUS, continental United States. So we thought by doing that we get a good balance of what the risks might be. The other reason that we really wanted to run the pilot is people tend to think of risks in very siloed areas. I mean, we had other ways to identify risks across the agency, but nothing really at a high-level kind of enterprise way where we wanted to integrate it with strategy. So we thought the pilots would be useful for that. We wanted folks not to think of stewardship as just a financial issue. We wanted them to consider every potential risk that they met, you know, as they came to work every day in their operational side, in their financial side, and their technological side. So we ran the pilots. We did a whole scenario where we identified risks, and then we worked on ways to mitigate or prevent the risks. And we turned them over at our field commands to green belts that were being trained across the agency as part of a larger DOD and DLA push.
Mm-hmm.
So once we had the pilot results and we saw the benefits of what had happened from the pilot, it was then that it was my job to actually figure out, okay, if we're going to pursue enterprise risk management, where's the best place to put it? Where's the best place to staff it? What kind of people should we use?
Mm-hmm.
The pilots were extremely useful because not only in terms of the results, but also in terms of change management. Because what we saw by and large across our agency was a lot of people saying, we've already seen so much change, rather than roll out something bright and sparkly and new, can
yeah.
you institute this? We understand it's very important, but mm-hmm. can you institute this by leveraging folks we already have in place? So the green belts that I mentioned already and some black belts, and then the folks who do managers' internal controls. And rather than creating new risk committees, why don't you take the existing governance forums that we have in place that involve senior leaders and use them to help us control and mitigate risks? So what we basically learned from the pilot was the best way in terms of change management, not just the actual results of the pilot, but the best way to place it in our agency so that it would be most effective by leveraging what we already had there.
Let's drill down on that pilot program a little bit deeper, though. What specifically were people doing on a day-to-day basis that you were watching to see what happened from a risk management perspective?
What we actually did is we went out first with the training program mm-hmm. so that folks began to realize how to identify risks. We encouraged folks to identify risks at specific field sites. Those mm-hmm. were raised up to leadership who helped them prioritize the risks.
Mm-hmm.
So that, for example, you had folks identifying everything from demand planning that Jeff alluded to earlier. Do we really understand what the warfighter needs now and
uh-huh.
in the future? Every war is different.
Mm-hmm.
What are we really doing in terms of that? Technological, will our systems, you know, be stable and in place across the broader span of time? Things like human resources that Jeff also alluded to. So people really did a good job of ferreting out things that could affect things across the enterprise, which they had done in minor ways before with some of the other initiatives that, you know, you always have in place, but they hadn't really ever taken a hard look at what some of the enterprise risks could be. And then we, like I said, we ran through the whole drill where the senior leadership helped them prioritize. And then we assigned them to green belts to help figure out the end-to-end process and ways to continually improve. And that's still ongoing from the end of the pilot.
For either Jeff or for you too, Linda, if you want to jump in, how much of this is psychological? How much of this is getting people to think, I want to be aware of what potential risks can be and bring them, like Linda said, up to somebody who can do something about it?
That's a big part of it, Francis. Really, one of the thrusts that we're pushing with the Enterprise Risk Management Program is to get the employees involved. I mean, they're the folks that are closest to the action. They know what the issues are. You know, Linda referenced the manager's internal control program as one of the leverage points that we're using to implement some of these philosophies into our management structure. The management control program has a motto called "Check It." What gets checked gets done,
mm-hmm.
and it is a grassroots opportunity for employees at all levels of the organization to identify particular issues that either have effectiveness or efficiency kind of implications and raise them for management attention and action. So, you know, getting back to the issue of really drawing this information from our workforce, that's a key component of it.
I want to give you a chance to follow up on that, but I've got to take a quick break. We'll be back to continue our conversation on enterprise risk management with Jeff Curtis, Jeff Stagnitti, and Linda Stacy Nichols of the Defense Logistics Agency on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose.
Tickets to All-American University men's and women's basketball home games in Bender Arena are on sale now. Get them online 24/7 at AUEagles.com or by calling the athletic ticket office at 202-885-TIXX. That's 202-885-TIXX. Make your plans now to be part of another historic season in Bender Arena.
Courage. The true meaning of the word is often forgotten, but the truth is our troops define courage every day. As part of Microsoft's year-long salute to our troops, they've partnered with the Washington Capitals and WTOP to present the third annual Washington Capitals Courage Caps. All proceeds benefit the USO of Metropolitan Washington. That means you're helping the truly courageous men and women who defend our country. Please show your courage. Join Microsoft and the Capitals by visiting WTOP.com and buying your Courage Cap today.
Listen next week to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Leaders Speak, a conversation on Homeland Security with Admiral Thad Allen, Commandant, U.S. Coast Guard, and John Morton, Assistant Secretary, Immigration and Customs. These two national leaders offer their extended reflections on their agencies, their roles in the larger Homeland Security Department, recent successes, innovations, and future challenges facing them and the agencies they lead in their collective efforts to secure the nation. Join host Michael Keegan next week for this compelling conversation on the Business of Government Hour.
We're aging. Turns out in the next 20 years, the worldwide shortage for labor force will be 45 million, which coincidentally is exactly the demographic bonus is going to occur in the north of India. So guess what? India is going to be providing workers for the world.
Stay up to date with technology. It's Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
With your Caps game day preview, I'm Ben Raby. The Capitals visit the New York Rangers tonight, and good news for the Caps as Alex Ovechkin is expected to play tonight. Ovechkin has missed six games with a strained shoulder, but the NHL's leading goal scorer has been practicing with the team and said this morning that he's good to go. Semyon Varlamov, meanwhile, will start in goal for the Caps. Varlamov has won six of his last seven starts. Caps and Rangers puck drop tonight just after 7.
Hi, this is John Gilroy, host of Federal Tech Talk here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Join me every Tuesday morning at 11 as I look at the world of high technology in the federal government. On Federal Tech Talk, I speak the language of federal CISOs, CIOs, and CTOs and get into the specifics for federal IT systems integrators. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're talking about enterprise risk management today. My guests are Jeffrey Curtis, Jeff Stagnitti, and Linda Stacy Nichols of the Defense Logistics Agency. And Jeff Curtis, before the break, we were talking about the psychological aspect of risk management. And then during the break, we kind of carried that along a little bit more, expanded on it. And I want to do that on the air as well. It seems to me there's two prongs to this, the psychological aspect of implementing something like this from scratch. And that is the person who is, I guess, going to be managed or going to participate in the risk management, as Linda was talking about, has to understand first of all, we're going to be doing this for a while. This isn't a fad that's going to be here for 9 months and then go away when this person decides they're going to leave and go to the private sector who's telling me that I have to do this. And the second element of it is, this is to my benefit. This is going to help me do my job better. This is going to help me serve my customers better. Or in the case of DLA, it's going to help serve the warfighter better. Talk about that element of it and making those people connections that make programs like this work.
As we talked about during the break, I think between Linda, Jeff, and myself, we've been at DLA about 70 years all told. And we've seen initiatives that worked. We've seen initiatives that haven't. And every initiative, when you undertake it, there's three key elements. There's people, processes, and technology. You can go buy the technology. You can implement it. You can get some smart people in the room, some subject matter experts, and develop the processes, document them. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
But the part where I think the unsuccessful initiatives fell down on was the people. And the places where we've been successful, we were very successful at getting the people on board. And one of the issues is, you know, it's harder to quantify the buy-in.
Mm-hmm.
And when you deal with people, quite honestly, it can be messy. You know, people are people. You know, they have lives, and it's hard to do that. And we're also always comfortable with status quo.
Mm-hmm.
So when we do things like change, and Linda talked about, you know, managing change and not overloading people with it, you got to get the folks on board because they're going to be the continuity. This isn't flavor of the day,
mm-hmm.
and we got to get the workforce on board.
But how do you convey to somebody that it isn't flavor of the day? Because how many times do you think people at agencies have heard, this time it's for real, we're really doing this one, and 18 months later it's gone and nobody knows what happened?
Too many times is the
mm-hmm.
answer to the
yeah.
question of how many times have we heard that. Having senior leader support, both at the, because we're a military agency, both at the military level and also at the senior civilian level,
mm-hmm.
goes a long way. And also, setting a foundation, providing the training, not just pushing it at them, having them be part of the process, having change happen with them,
mm-hmm.
not having change happen to them. And we pulled off our enterprise resource planning system, which I think we're one of the few to ever actually pull off such an implementation, I think was in no small part due to the change management efforts, of which Linda's probably the most knowledgeable expert in change management at DLA. But getting people as part of the process up front. Now, when you do that, though, it slows things down a little bit at the front.
Mm-hmm.
It causes some angst that things aren't moving fast enough. But of all the things we've said today, I don't believe anything more than, you know, if you get the people on board, if you get a good foundation, it's going to pay off in the long term.
Linda, you mentioned when you were talking about the pilot program that one of the upfront pieces of it was the training where you had people coming in and you wanted to hear. It sounded to me like you were listening to what the rank and file people were thinking were the risks so that you could then educate them. Yes, that's the kind of thing we're looking for. This kind of thing, maybe not so much. And helping them to understand the prioritization. Then when you know what the list of risks are, they can go up the chain. Do I have that right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you think about it, who better but the rank and file employee knows really what the risks are?
Well, but there's probably a lot of rank and file people out there that feel like they're not being heard.
Yes.
At other agencies.
Absolutely.
Where it sounds like you're doing a little different.
Yeah. In this case, that they know that it can be elevated all the way up the chain.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the great thing about enterprise risk management and its potential is it really does empower all levels of employees. I mean, anything can be raised up, and then what happens is you go through kind of a heat map scenario that Jeff was describing earlier. What's the likelihood? You know, what's the impact if it does happen? Can it
mm-hmm.
be mitigated? And then it continues to go up. The other way, it really gets instituted so that it's not just flavor of the month or, you know, flash in the pan,
mm-hmm.
is you actually institute it into your governance forums. And we have a director, Vice Admiral Thompson, who has said on several occasions, I want a lot of things to continue long after I'm gone.
Mm-hmm.
I want to institute things that are lasting. Because, you know, in the military command environment, you get a new leader every 3 years or so. You know, it's a little bit quicker than when the president turns around. So one of the ways you really do that is you embody in your governance forums like we have here this dedication to something like enterprise risk management. So now we have a stewardship committee that was already in place looking at other stewardship across the agency. It'll be this committee's job to also look at risks and then raise them up to the next level of governance, which is our strategy council, which is actually headed up by our director, Vice Admiral Thompson. So that's another way that it gets instituted. So it's a great way to get things at the very bottom level. I mean, you're talking about risks that employees themselves know better than anybody else, and mm-hmm. they still have the potential to make it all the way up to the Strategy Council where folks decide what to really go after.
Jeff Stagniti, I'm sorry to do this to you, but I only have about 30 seconds until we have to get into a break.
Sure.
Jeff Curtis was talking about the higher up, the better, as far as getting people to buy into it. How high up should it go? All the way to the secretary?
Within our agency, our focus, the boundaries for us is really our director. In terms of carrying forward the message of enterprise risk management and the things that it can do, our leadership obviously has oversight at the Department of Defense. Our leadership would carry that through to their, promoting and extolling the virtues of this to the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition Technology and Logistics, and even on further.
The higher the better, right?
The higher the better.
All right. Back to wrap up our conversation about enterprise risk management with the team from the Defense Logistics Agency in just a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
George Washington basketball returns to Federal News Radio for another thrilling season of college hoops.
Aaron Ware underneath the basket, reverse lane, good. King the three-pointer left side, good!
Head coach Carl Hobbs is back for his ninth season with six new freshmen. Also returning leading scorer Damian Hollis against a talented schedule, including Oregon State, Providence, George Mason, Navy, and the Atlantic 10. Listen all season long for the excitement of George Washington basketball on the flagship station for Colonials Hoops, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Here's Robert Carey, CIO, Navy, on the Federal Executive Forum on the Government Cloud, sponsored by EMC.
Sailors and Marines don't care about cloud. They care about that experience they're having with the network and the ability to access data when it's needed, where it's needed. They don't want to hear about any hiccups in the middle. They don't care about security layers. They care about, I search, I find, I analyze, I act, I go do my thing. And so cloud actually enables that.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Government agencies expect vast amounts of information to be available no matter where they are, no matter what device they use. Traditional storage systems were not designed with cloud computing in mind, and when they're used as a foundation, become complex, hard to scale, and expensive. EMC Atmos was designed to address the government's needs for cloud-based information providers. EMC Atmos makes extensive use of metadata and policy to streamline the delivery of petabytes of information. For additional information on EMC Atmos, go to emc.com.
If you work for or have worked for the federal government, I want to tell you about an organization that's been around for over 80 years. It's NARF. Organized in 1921 to protect and enhance the retirement and health benefits of federal employees, NARF wants you to know that laws can change and so can your retirement security. Protect it by joining NARF, the only association that's dedicated to making sure your retirement is secure when you reach retirement. Don't wait until after you retire to join NARF. Check out their website at www.narfe.org. You'll see that NARF is a great investment for your retirement future. Then click on the Join Now button and join hundreds of thousands of federal retirees and employees as a NARF member. That's www.narfe.org. Or call 1-800-627-3394 and ask them to send you some information. Join now. NARF, your best retirement investment.
Newsmakers make news.
Jason Miller joining us now with his interview with OPM Director John Barry.
The Veterans Affairs Administration, the Department of Labor, and OPM to craft what we believe is going to be essentially a Korn Ferry model, a headhunter model, if you will, to engaging our vets in domestic agencies. This is in the final throes of approval through the administration. So far, it's looking very good.
The Daily Debrief with Chris Dorabeck and Amy Morris, weekday afternoons from 3 to 7, only on Federal News Radio, 1500. AM.
We're back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, and I want to say thanks to Jeff Curtis, Jeff Stagnitti, and Linda Stacy Nichols of the Defense Logistics Agency. And I appreciate you coming into the studio, first of all, to be with me to talk about this stuff in person. We just have a few minutes left, and Jeff Stagnitti, I'm going to start with you. I am working at another agency. I'm listening to this conversation. I'm saying we really need to get a handle on risk management rather than just see the pants. What do I do first?
The first thing that I would do relative to implementing anything new, be it risk management or any initiative, is really take the pulse of your organization in terms of its ability to take on new things and change. That's one of the things that we've done at DLA, and that's part of the reason that the approach that we're taking to implementation is to leverage existing governance forums and governance structures that are in place and take advantage of existing staff and tools where they are.
Jeff Curtis, those tools are out there. It's just a matter of finding the right ones and putting them to use?
Absolutely. And I think something when folks go to look at this, we were talking a little bit during the break, and Mr. Stagnitti here is setting up his office. That office will never be very large.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff's going to rely on matrix staff and so on. But the key is if you end up with an enterprise risk management office that is too large, they'll be the people that manage risk. And what we need to do is make it so it's in everybody's mind or on everybody's mind every day, and that these folks can help facilitate, but it needs to be part of all of our jobs.
Linda, is there any organization of any size that's too big or too small or too unwieldy or too whatever that can't utilize these concepts to improve the way they do business?
No, I can't imagine. I think it's useful to every potential organization. Coming out of the conference that we had in October, I would say anybody, they'll have to wait almost a year now, I guess, to go to another conference. But that experience was phenomenal because you begin to hear people's stories and you begin to see peers. I mean, we had government agencies there, but also academia and some of their thoughts on what had happened and private industry and their thoughts on what had happened. And people just start to, you know, talk over their own issues, and you see the benefits everywhere. So I think that if I were to leave people with one idea, make sure you go to something like that where you can actually get with peers and folks that are going through the same experience. Very useful.